Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Much loved Big Brother star Nikki Graham tragically passed away last Friday at the age of just 38 after losing her battle to anorexia. Now more than ever, we need to support people affected by this terrible disorder. Now, Gogglebox Ireland star Sheila Naughton was diagnosed with anorexia in August 2017 and she joins me on the line. Sheila, it's so good to have you. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
It's so great to have you. Now, firstly, can you just remind us which family you were in on Gogglebox Ireland?
Yeah, so we were in season one and season two and we were the dad and two daughters. And I always say that because I'm like, we changed our hair so much that it got to the point that my dad was out one day and someone said, "Who are the two girls with you?" And he was like, "Sheila and Alice." So we were the Naughtons from Blessington in Wicklow.
Absolutely. Was it an enjoyable experience?
Oh, it was so enjoyable. I absolutely loved doing it. And do you know, part of it was that we never would have been together as much to sit down and relax every day if it hadn't been for that show, because we were all off doing different things. And I don't know, it really is a real family show, even when you're participating in it.
Great experience to have with your dad and your sister. Just lovely.
Yeah.
Now, I need to ask you about your reaction when you heard the really sad news about Nikki Graham. When you heard that news, what was your first thought?
That I wasn't surprised at all, because I have, there was one moment in particular, and it was during lockdown. A photo was put out by the press of Nikki and a friend, and you know, they were walking, getting coffee or whatever. And it isn't always about looks, but eating disorders really, really important, but it's hard to ignore that she was really unwell. And I remember seeing the comments online of people saying, "I hope this girl gets help," and people accusing them of body shaming and giving out to those people who were coming. And I said, "No, they're not body shaming. This girl is really, really sick, and we're just actually once again ignoring that this is an eating disorder and pretending that eating disorders don't exist." So it also doesn't surprise me that she had to fight to get services, and when she was almost there, she just lost her battle. Because I only look back now and realise I nearly lost my battle a few times, but you don't realise when you're in it. So I also have to say I was upset, because I was in sixth class when she was in Big Brother, and I was obsessed with her to the point that I wanted my confirmation name to be Nikki, and my mother had to tell me I couldn't go up to the priest and say that my confirmation name was Nikki.
Oh, wow. So you were a huge fan. It was just so sad. I'm shocked that you weren't shocked, really. But you had your own experience, as you mentioned there. Can you bring us back to when you first noticed an issue with your, let's say, relationship with food and exercise?
I suppose when I first noticed it, and not necessarily when it became, you know, well, when other people thought it was a problem, was definitely throughout college. That was when I noticed it. But, you know, when I look back, I actually had been engaging in behaviour since the age of 7. But when I noticed it was in college, when I started to do things like, I went on every fad diet there was out there. For someone who was like a smart enough girl, I was so gullible. I brought into every single thing they put out there, any tea, any detox, whatever it was, I tried it. So that should have been a big warning sign that, you know, I wasn't happy with how I looked, that I was trying to so drastically change it. But that became worse and worse. And I'd go in and out of phases in college of dieting and not dieting. And that was when I knew myself, oh, I don't really behave around food the way I look and see my other friends and my family doing it. And I would go home at the weekends and I'd say, "Oh, well, you're having that, but I've actually got all of this stuff with me and I'm not going to eat what you're eating." And they thought that was strange, but they thought, "Oh, she's in college, she's probably trying things." So that was when I noticed it. But when it actually started was when I was 7, was the first time I stood on a weighing scale in my granny's house. And I remember the numbers, I remember the sound of the scale. And then that went on. Like 11 years of age, my mother says she remembers I was standing in the mirror trying to suck in to see if I could see my ribs. And she never knew why your daughter was doing this. And we never thought it was a big deal, because you would never think an 11-year-old would be obsessed with something like that. But I was. And I suppose then, just to bring it forward, then I went on my first diet in fifth year. And I always say to people then, I've kind of been on a diet since, which is really, really sad. But it just consumed me then from about the age of 16, 17.
16, 17. Your family, did they just think, oh, she's just trying something new, she's just come, they, when did they notice it was an issue or a problem?
Yeah, so, I mean, as I said, when I was growing up, they always thought it was funny with food. I was really, really picky. And I would do things like, oh, like, I don't want my ice cream and cake in the same bowl because they'll touch and I don't like that. And so I was always funny around food. And as I mentioned there, I was obsessed with Nikki Graham. I was also obsessed with Mary-Kate Olsen. Like, I was obsessed with thin celebrities. But again, you wouldn't really acknowledge it. Then when I was in college like that, they kind of thought, oh, she's probably going through some sort of a phase. Like, I mean, she's eating a lot of sweet potato, but, oh, it's fine. You know, and they kind of thought it was unusual. And I remember a few times mentioning myself that I was feeling a bit stressed around food, or I didn't want to go to certain events because I was afraid of what food was going to be there. But again, like I hear many parents who will contact me now saying, oh, we don't think he or she is sick yet. Again, we didn't think there was anything wrong. And eventually then, I was in college in Trinity doing drama and theatre studies. But can I say, I had the most amazing time. I had a great life and a great childhood. But
and well done, a tricky course to get into, so fair play to you.
And I loved it. But then, you know, I left and it was like, well, what do I do now? I don't know what to do. And I actually had so many ideas, I couldn't focus on one. So anyway, I ended up that summer of 2017 just... I just decided I'm going to work on my image. And I sent a photo to my dad. I hadn't seen them in about 2 weeks or something like that. Oh, no, actually, right, 2 months. And I just sent a photo of me outside work one day. And I don't know if secretly it was a bit of a call for help from me, because I knew that I was really, really struggling. And he says, he'll never forget that day. Just my eyes looked like they were popping out of my head. And he just thought, we have a serious, serious problem. And then that week, I think it was, my sister saw me in the gym, and I remember her standing with me for my entire session, and I was like, go away. And eventually then she, apparently when she left, said, rang my parents and said, we need to do something.
Your family staged an intervention. Can you tell us about that? How did you feel?
Yeah, do you know what's so strange? And anyone who has disordered eating or an eating disorder, or parents who've had to deal with it, like, as much as I kind of sent little hints that I maybe wanted help, I really didn't. So I arrived home from work, from the gym, at 11:30 at night, I should say, and they were in my kitchen with my housemate, and they just said, Sheila, we need to talk to you. And I was like, what's going on? You know, and I was very defensive. An eating disorder makes you so defensive, you can be really, really nasty. And they sat me down, though, and they said, look, we think there's a problem and we'd like to bring you to get help. We're taking it out of your hands now. And part of me was like, no, but part of me was like, please, please stop this, because I can't live like this anymore, because I wasn't living. Like, my life was the gym, wondering how I could restrict my food, and just I didn't even feel like I was worthy of having friends or relationships or anything. Nothing mattered anymore. I remember waking up and thinking, I can't believe I have to do this all over again today. So part of me was like, please take this away from me. And they took me from Dublin. I don't think I never returned to the house again. I had to leave my job. We were off Gogglebox as well. And, you know, everything just stopped then, because, and then I realised, oh, I'm quite sick.
You named your eating disorder Janine, is that right?
Yeah. And there's loads of lots of people have opinions on this. I was told so many times, people saying, you shouldn't do that. Oh, you really shouldn't give it that much power. And I thought, no, it has so much power. It's making me almost die. So, you know, that's not me. Sheila would never do that. Sheila wants to live. Sheila wants so much more in her life. So it's not me. So I sat with my sister one day in hospital when I'd been admitted, and I just said, oh, this, she has to have a name. And we didn't know any Janines. And I always say, I'm sure there are really nice Janines out there. But you know what? I don't know any. So it's Janine.
Okay. Tell me about your treatment and how vital that was. Did you feel a sense of relief a little bit when your family intervened, stopped everything, stopped your life to get you better?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because it's so weird. People would always be like, are you not delighted you're getting help? No, I wasn't, because I didn't want someone to take this eating disorder from me. It was all I had. I felt like it was all I had. I thought I was nothing without it. And I thought, what do I have to offer the world if I don't have this, if I don't have Janine with me? And I really didn't want them to take it from me. And I can just say, it is the scariest thing in the world. Anyone who's going into recovery or in recovery, they're so brave, because dealing with your mind every day is terrifying.
Yeah.
But part of me was also like, could you imagine if I got over this and I could live again and I could actually get a job? I was like, that would be amazing. So my treatment, I always, you know, like I would always encourage people to go and get the treatment. It was so hard to get, as we've seen there. I mean, the Nicky Graham case kind of really shows it. But it's but people in Ireland like are really struggling to get help. And I was very grateful to get the help. But I think I just needed so much more support when I came out of hospital. You get put into this little bubble and these nurses are around you and everyone's protecting you and making sure you're okay. And you almost become a little bit institutionalised when you're in an inpatient. I was in twice and I became so comfortable there that coming out was terrifying. So maybe, you know, there was a bit more support there would have been ideal. But at the same time, I couldn't have done it on my own. I really couldn't.
How are you doing now?
I'm still in recovery, so I always make that really, really clear. I'm 3.5 years in now, and life is so much better. Like, good. I can't believe that I was that sick. I really, really can't. I have a job, I have a house, I have a car, I live away from home, something that I never thought I'd be able to do because I never thought I'd trust myself to not be around people and have people checking in on me. But no, I'm strong enough now that when the little blips come every day, which they do come every day, every time I come to a meal I have to convince myself to have it. But I know that I'm strong enough now to be able to do that. And I remember being told when I went into early recovery not to make any big decisions within 2 years. But I did make big decisions and I got a job and I got my dream job. And I thought, this is my motivation. This is why I have to stay well. So the only thing I would say is, by the book, it doesn't always suit everyone. I'm very rebellious and determined. So it was great to get the help at the start, but then finding my kind of my ambition was definitely what keeping me well.
What is an important message you'd like to share for people who feel they have a bad relationship with food and exercise?
It's to address it now. I so many times hear people saying, but I'm not, or but I'm not this size, or but I'm not that bad yet. And I'm like, yes. That's the word. Like, why would you wait? I don't want to see anybody. I couldn't walk up the stairs. I remember I used to have to crawl up my stairs. Like, I remember falling on the street and having older people have to help me up because I couldn't hold myself up. I don't want to see anybody ever end up like that because it's miserable. To not want to live is absolutely horrendous. But if you tackle it early, like that, you know, if you get a cut, you put a plaster on it. So. You know, try and tackle those issues now. A lot of people in Ireland do have disordered eating. A lot of my friends have disordered eating. It doesn't mean you have an eating disorder. And if you can nip it in the bud, I really think that that's the key. Similarly, if you're a parent, get them the help now. Like, don't wait. Don't say, oh, well, we'll wait and see. Why would you wait? Sure, isn't it great if it's a phase? Absolutely fantastic that it's a phase and they grow out of. But if they don't, you don't want to leave it there. Also, just for people in general, it's funny, I was listening to the Two Johnnies podcast recently, and one of them spoke about people feeling like they can just come up and say whatever they like to you and your appearance. That's something that I experienced an awful lot, with people just wanting to, the minute they saw that I was on television, they and I didn't feel like I was in any way well known, but they felt like they could approach me in nightclubs and just say things about my appearance. So, oh God, where have you gone to? You're fading away. Little did they know that that was a really, really triggering and upsetting thing for me, and I would like take myself away from nights out and go home and be devastated about that. So, and family members as well saying, God, where are you gone away to? Or complimenting my weight loss. So it's just to be very, very careful with the language and the way that you approach people when you comment on their appearance as well. So I suppose those are the big messages for parents, to get help sooner rather than later, but also know that you can't like make them better. You have to let them get better. And if you're struggling, why not talk to somebody now as opposed to letting it get too far?
And even just taking control of your life, you know, stopping that from happening. Now, I'd like to welcome my next guest, consultant dietitian and founder of HealthPro, Harriet Lynch. Good morning.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for the warm welcome there. And it's so great, Sheila, just to hear your journey of recovery. That is so important to hear within the community, especially when we've received such a tragic loss within the community as well. So thanks for sharing your story there, Sheila. Brilliant.
Now, Harriet, you specialise in dietetic support for eating disorders. Can we talk about some of the disordered eating warning signs that we should all be looking out for?
Yes, Jennifer, for the last 13 years, I've been helping individuals recover from eating distress, disordered eating and eating disorders. So they're just important to know that they're all quite different within themselves, you know. But unfortunately, disordered eating and eating distress seems to be affecting all age profiles. Nobody is escaping this, you know. I have clients as young as 6 on my books and upwards into the late 60s and early 70s. So people are being affected by what I would call diet culture. And for those who are unfamiliar with that term, diet culture would be a set of beliefs and norms that are within society that play on our emotions around food, convincing us that we need to transform our bodies into something more acceptable. And that if we don't do it, we can be seen as failure. And that's promoted all everywhere we turn. It just seems to be there. So there's a lot of misinformation out there, and it's everywhere. It's at the click of a button. It's on our bookshelves. It's in magazines. And that misinformation is very convincing and is challenging so many of my clients. And thus, people out there in the nation are becoming very confused. And Sheila picked up on a lot of that, you know. Many people are writing nutrition plans. They're telling people how and when what to eat. There's a loud noise out there telling people to reduce their energy intake, to eat low-energy diets, to cut out different food groups. Foods are now labeled everywhere as good or bad or healthy or unhealthy. And people are really establishing very strong food rules. And what I'm seeing with that is people are really slowing down their bodies. Their bodies begin to down-regulate on them, and people are establishing more and more food rules, and they're losing the ability to be able to listen to their body's flawless messaging system, and that is a significant challenge. So when we're talking about signs and symptoms of this, it can be just as simple as saying something like, you know what, I am being healthy today, you know, I am being good today. And then this generally means that I'm only eating what I would call maybe a good food. This is of great concern in my work. So what I need people to know that is that there are all food matters. We need everyone to know that there are no good or bad foods. Some foods the body will benefit from more, and some foods we need less of, but everything can be consumed. Food is far, far more than just fuel. It's fun, it's social, it's financial. But I really need your listeners to move away from labelling foods as good or bad and to know that all foods have a place in the human diet.
Harriet, it sounds like, I mean, it sounds like we have to reset ourselves and start again with this, because my worry is we're too late for a lot of people. And now we're in the stage where we have to, there's a lot of people, you know, like Sheila said, I know people who have problems with food and exercise. So are you talking, this is what we have to do with our children in the homes, in the schools, to stop that this awful cycle we're in?
We do, absolutely, 100%. You know, that is prevention is really crucial. You know, we need to move away from people, our language around food. Like, the establishment, so many people are feeling guilt about food, what they're eating, because they've deemed them to be unhealthy or bad. People are everywhere. People are naming days as cheat days. People are removing foods from their diet. They're skipping dinner with their pals because they're afraid of breaking the rules that they're following. You know, so when it comes to our children, we really need to be using our language. Like, it's so powerful, our language and what we're saying. And if we don't start to change our own beliefs and what we're seeing, or, you know, what we're feeling ourselves around our own food rules and what's happening, our children will pick up on that.
They're not stupid. I mean, and they see your habits and they hear you calling things a cheat, or I'm not going to eat that, or I feel fat. They hear all this language that is so damaging, right? So how can we focus on helpful and healthful conversations?
Yeah, so I recommend that really anyone that's around children, okay, that all parents, teachers, coaches, to start looking at their own relationship with food and start working on their own relationship first. And it's so important that we move away from shaming food, labeling foods as healthy and unhealthy. I really feel we must teach our children how to enjoy food that it's much more than just fuel, that it's fun and enjoyment. Mm. It's celebratory.
Yeah. Okay? It's sorry, so we haven't more. Heard this. I love this because very rarely we talk about food as fun and celebratory and the enjoyment we get out of it, you know, with friends and sharing. And it's always healthy or not healthy. That's it. Yeah. That's the narrative at the moment.
The one thing I notice with my own children is that they have such a powerful ability to be able to recognize themselves. They're able to listen to their body. And we've missed that. We're like a lot of the nation is now not able to listen to their hunger signals and how their body is telling them what they need right now. You know, my main worry or concern is that the food that that children are growing up more feeling that food is wrong, you know. My greatest wish, I know Sheila had mentioned this in her story, is that can we please remove weighing scales from the home? Like, it's not about weight. It's about our behaviours.
Yeah, that's a really good tip. And it's so small, isn't it? Just that little gesture of getting rid of that so we're not monitoring what we weigh. Harriet, can you stay with us? We want to continue this conversation because we're getting a huge, huge reaction on our text. I'm going to take a little break and we'll be back right after this.
My, what white walls your rental has. Wouldn't it be a shame if someone drew all over them for no reason? And what do we have here? You're back living in your childhood bedroom, and all that 90s sci-fi memorabilia is starting to feel like a bit of a mood kill. Ready to move, but don't know where to start? Start here with EBS, the Mortgage Masters. Lending criteria, terms and conditions apply. EBS DAC is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
The Lotto jackpot is an estimated 12.5 million euro. Play responsibly in-store, in-app or at lottery.ie. The National Lottery. It could be you.
Now, Jennifer Zamparelli, 2FM, good morning. We are back. Before the break, we were having a great chat with consultant, dietitian and founder of HealthPro, Harriet Lynch. Thanks for staying with us. I thought it's best to keep you because a lot of people have questions and we need to talk about what is going on and our relationship with our bodies, which is clearly skewed and clearly not great at the moment, and it's a problem and a cycle that we have to break for the sake of ourselves and our health and for the sake of our children. Can you talk us through just the steps involved when seeking help for an eating disorder? Now, Sheila was on and her family staged an intervention after years and years and years. Is that needed? Because a lot of the times we don't know if we have a problem. So is a family intervention needed, or what are the necessary steps?
Do you know what, Jennifer? In the ideal world, I would love if everyone that is, you know, anyway challenged by food to seek help from a registered dietitian and or a psychotherapist, you know, a specialist in the area, you know. Early intervention is key. The sooner a person gets help, the sooner we can help them to kind of unravel a lot of the food rules and beliefs that have developed over their lifespan. Quite often with my clients, you know, food is sometimes the management of how they're coping with other areas in their lives. And that is something that needs to be unraveled, and we need professional and a personal support team in order to be able to do that. So from a professional support team, really what you're looking for is to try and build a team around that person. And really it's about prevention of getting to the stage where, unfortunately, and Sheila's journey, where she had to go for the inpatient admission, you know. If we can catch it early, we definitely know recovery is possible. Now, there is a difference between disordered eating and an eating disorder, okay? So an eating disorder is a psychiatric condition, and not everybody can develop that, you know? We don't actually understand really exactly how an eating disorder or why it develops, but we do know that some people perhaps are missing the gene and they can push their bodies to such an extreme. Other people, what we find on more on the disordered eating, may find themselves on a yo-yo cycle. Mm. So equally, people need support and people need help. And we have to start removing ourselves from diet culture, from food shaming, from the guilt around food, from, you know, skipping meals out with pals because we're following a certain diet at the time. This is becoming really, really dangerous. It's affecting all age profiles. Do you know that's there?
Harry, I just want to go to some of the texts that have come in. A lot of texts coming in on this to 51552. If you have any questions, you can get in touch. Jen, this is such an informative topic and I'm learning so much about how to speak around my children. Someone else says, my daughter was hospitalised and tube fed, aged 11. Still not recovered, now 16. Thanks for having this issue on the show. I just want to go to this one. I think this is an important one. Maybe you can help. Jen, I'm concerned that my friend has an eating disorder. She is living alone and has always been obsessed with her diet. And I think COVID has allowed her to obsess more without intervention as she's not seeing people. What do you have any advice for people out there who suspect their friends or their family have a problem and an issue? What is the best way to approach that?
Yeah. So listen, every individual and every person is different. And as Sheila mentioned earlier, the eating disorder in itself can be quite vindictive. I love that Sheila was able to name her eating disorder. Mm-hmm. That's something I definitely work on with my clients. And she was able to separate it from herself, you know. The help that's needed is we need to start opening up the conversation with that person. Now, listen, the person can get very defensive, but in most cases, it is also met with relief, okay? People, my clients, do not want to have the thoughts and beliefs and the feelings and the emotions that they're feeling right now. They want to find a recovery, but also it does become their world as well. So broaching the conversation, like opening it up and being non-judgmental about it, just telling people that you're there for them, that you're, you know, you can hear them, you can see and feel. A compassionate-led approach would be really what we'd be looking at, you know, for that person, because the torment that they're getting within their own mindset is so intense that we don't want anyone to judge or shame them. It is more about there's support there, you can get help, and just opening that conversation.
I just know from experience, it's a tricky one because I think people are afraid they're going to say the wrong thing and trigger and all that kind of stuff. So you say just maybe don't talk about, just ask them how they're feeling. Is that what you would suggest to do and say that you're there for them? Is that a good way to initially start that conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. Just opening up the doors and letting them know that you're there, that you're not going to judge, you know, that you feel that you maybe noticed or, you know, that they might be not attending some family dinners or this is how you've noticed and you feel that perhaps talking to a dietitian, a registered dietitian or a psychologist or a psychotherapist would be of help to them. And, you know, maybe helping them to find the right person. Not everyone is suited to everyone, you know. So helping and finding the right person that they can connect in with, because it is more than just about the food. It is an emotional distress. And then the food aspect can be the management of that distress.
That's important to note, because I reached out to someone who I know is going through something similar with a family member, and he said he wants to hug that person and strangle them at the same time because it can be infuriating because they tend to hide a lot of stuff and become very good at lying and all that, you know, and hiding what they're doing. What are some ways, just for people listening and for all of us, what are some of the ways we can teach our kids about body love? Get rid of that scales, first of all. Get rid of that scales in your house is number one. What else?
Yeah, I had such a win moment in my own household there recently when my now 5-year-old, then 4-year-old, was just stopped at the kitchen table and she was just looking down and she just looked up at me and she said to me, you know what, Mummy, I love my legs. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know. So it's amazing where at such a young age, we have a love for our bodies, the fun that it gives to us. And somewhere along the line, that can be just knocked out of ourselves. So I think as parents, we need to reduce our focus on the food and the shaming of the food in our households. You know, we have to start from our own relationship first. You know, we need to teach our children respond, you know, how to appreciate their bodies. But we also have to appreciate our bodies ourselves. You know, we need to also help our children to appreciate the people around them, you know, to learn how to compliment people without focusing on their looks.
Mm.
You know, we also need to be very sincere to our children. And something that came up in my clinic with one of the parents is that one of their youngest children asked them, really, what is a diet? And, you know, what I was trying to say to them is just to help them, just explain, be sincere to the children, to let them know what a diet is. That a diet is when people try to make their body smaller by eating less, and it does not work. It can make people very, very sick.
I just want to go to another text. Sorry, Harriet, to cut over you there. I just started listening now. This texter says, just wanted to add that my son came home from school yesterday and told me that his teacher told the class that curries are unhealthy. I make mine from scratch with loads of everything good in it. Kids love it. Hate that this seed is being planted in his head. I work in public health and think people's perception of food and diet has gone crazy. We need to stop this. I mean, you have so much control because kids go out into the world. They meet other people on diets. They meet other people. They get onto social media. They have teachers who tell them that curries aren't healthy. Jesus, that's one way I can get veg into my kids. I mean, we can do so much at home, but if you're a teacher, if you have friends, it's not just people who have kids. We all have a part to play in this because it is off the scale, a huge problem in the world, as I mentioned, with millions of people suffering with eating disorders and this country. But we all have a part to play, don't we?
We do, Jennifer, absolutely. And that's what I said earlier, is that as parents, teachers, coaches, if we have any interaction with children, we must look at our own relationship with food first, you know.
Mm.
People, as Sheila said earlier, you know, people have this unlicensed ability or view to be able to go and comment and just say what they feel like around food, even though it does not support best practice, you know. Our kids listen to this, especially teachers, coaches. They only listen to those more than their parents at times, you know.
Yeah.
And we have to teach our kids that food is there to help them to grow, to develop.
And to enjoy.
And to enjoy, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Jen, I have a 16-year-old who is not eating properly and denying it. That would be a red flag. She gets defensive when we talk about it. It is becoming her world. What should I do?
Yeah. So once again, I would just open up the conversation, you know. Tell them, listen, I was listening to a dietitian on 2FM today and I noticed that some things that she was saying that I, you know, flag with what I'm seeing is happening in your world right now. You know, perhaps we can talk about this, or perhaps maybe we can get you a little bit of help. The help is here. Like, it's out there. We just need to open the conversation and normalize the conversation and really just have the tools around us, you know, that are available, which would be like BodyWise would have a lot of information on their site regarding kind of early signs and symptoms to look out for. You know, there's dietitians out there that specialize in this area. There's psychotherapists that specialize in this area. But please seek the right professional support, because there is a lot of misinformation out there with the likes of social media. I'm not going to mention any one platform, but everyone has become nearly a nutrition expert on these platforms. And this is so, so dangerous. So within the households, you have to open up the conversation and normalize and just let people know that dieting does not work. It makes people very sick. And especially for kids who are growing, who are hitting puberty, your body is going to change. You're going to increase your muscle mass. We're going to change your shapes. And this is exciting time, that it's not to be a time of shame.
Lastly, I just want to ask you, can you just talk us through the process involved if someone presents with an eating disorder in your clinic?
Okay, so if someone comes to see me with an eating disorder, first thing I will do is assess them. You know, then I'll figure out, and through that assessment process, I look for
like, who's the professional team around them? If they have one already, brilliant. I will work so closely with that team, you know. If they don't, I will help them to build that team around them. Now, within that, we're looking at the professional team, but we're also looking at the personal team. Families are my clients at times' best allies. They're so supportive and they're so needed on the journey. It's nobody's fault. It's just something that's happened along the journey, and this person just needs help. And we need to get them early in the intervention for them, you know, or early help for them, should I say.
Good advice.
To start the process of a recovery, whether it's a diagnosis of an eating disorder, whether it's a poor relationship with food, whether it's eating distress or disordered eating, but whatever they need, the right professional advice. And I promise you there, it is out there. Unfortunately, we do have to go digging for it. And that's another challenge in itself. But we need to try and dull down the noise of diet culture, that celebrities and, you know, that's the general conversation around there, and try to avoid ourselves feeling guilty for eating or shame, or try to remove words like labeling days as cheat days. There's no days of cheat days. You know, we want to get our nutrition right most of the time, but also to have fun with food as well, and there to enjoy it and the culinary creations that are there as well that we can have with food.
And I think it's important to remember eating disorders are not a choice, and everyone deserves accessible treatment. As
correct.
Harriet said, yeah. For more information on this, please visit Bodywise, whys.ie. It's a great resource and they have really experienced people there on hand if you need any support at all. I just want to say a huge thanks to Sheila Naughton for sharing her story, and to you, consultant dietitian Harriet Lynch from HealthPro, for offering such great advice. Harriet, thank you for coming on the show. Hopefully
no problem.
we'll get you back on again.
Oh, thank you, Jennifer. I'd love that.
Thanks, Harriet.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.